Okay, welcome. It's very exciting to have you here. This is the first Lunch and Learn of our series this year. We have a phenomenal lineup. It's in the brochure each week in the weekly. We'll also have the upcoming speakers. Encourage you to come, bring your friends. You see there's a great lunch spread this week. We're always looking for sponsors. If you'd like to sponsor one of the coming weeks in honor and memory, for a birthday, an anniversary, for no reason at all, you can speak to Rabbi Moskowitz. Our topic for today is a fascinating topic. It's a topic that I think is somewhat controversial, and for some people is a very emotionally charged topic. Some people feel deeply connected to the idea of Ayin Hara. Their life is consumed with Ayin Hara. They have all little rituals and all little ceremonies to avoid Ayin Hara. Their whole life is defined by not being influenced or affected to be under the influence of Ayin Hara. And then there are those who are the opposite extreme. There's a whole segment of people, a whole segment of the population who utterly and absolutely, they categorically dismiss the possibility of Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara? It's a hoax. It's fake. It's ridiculous. There's no such thing as Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara is completely and utterly irrelevant and insignificant in the Jewish tradition. Those are the two extremes. That Ayin Hara is a force to be reckoned with. We have to wear all kinds of bracelets and decorate the... Nobody has them? Yeah, please give them out. And decorate the... Please. And decorate... Ooh, I need one of the... Ayin Hara is a force to be reckoned with. We have to wear red bracelets and decorate the cribs of our children and pour this way, not that way, and step over this way and not step over that way, and say this and don't say that. Look here, don't look there. Ayin Hara is a force to be reckoned with. That's one extreme. And as I said, the other extreme says, Ayin Hara, give it your best shot. It's a joke. It's nothing. It's meaningless. It has no power. It has no influence. It is ultimately, Ayin Hara is simply superstition. It's foolish superstition. So which one's right? If we examine the sources, I don't mean which one's right, what your bubby told you. I mean, if we turn back, not to, God forbid, say anything disparaging about anybody's bubby, but if we turn to the sources themselves, if we turn to the texts themselves, is Ayin Hara a force to be reckoned with? Or is it a silly superstition? Is it legitimate? Or is it entirely made up and invalid? That's where we're going to spend our time. We have a lot of sources to go through. We're going to try to go through them quickly and offer a few different suggestions about how Ayin Hara works, if it exists at all. So the first notion I want to dispel is that there's no such thing as Ayin Hara. Anyone who tells you Jewish tradition does not embrace the concept of Ayin Hara is, one word, ignorant. They're ignorant. And they're ignorant of some of our most basic sources. For example, Pirkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers, source number one on page one. Says Pirkei Avos in the second parak, Omar Lahem, Tsuru Ezi Hiderach Rashi Yisrachak Bimena HaAdam. Go out and look. What is a improper path that a person should avoid? Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Rabbi Eliezer says, you know what's an improper path to avoid? Ayin Hara. Don't act with Ayin Ra'ah. Now, I didn't tell you, by the way, how we define Ayin Ra, that's obviously what we're going to spend our time on. But to say that that term is a modern term, it's a made-up term, it's a mystical term, is simply ignorance. The Mishnah employs that term. Rabbi Eliezer says, you want to know the improper behavior that we should avoid? Don't live life with an Ayin Ra, with an evil eye. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, the next Mishnah, Ayin Ra, V'yetzer Hara, V'sinas Abrios, Matzinas Ha'adam Min Ha'olam. There are three character traits, three behaviors which remove a person from the world. Don't act like them, and they are Ayin Ra, an evil eye. Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, and Sinas Brios, to be filled with hatred and animosity towards others. It removes you from the world. Again, we could spend time, another time. What does it mean? We find this expression in Pirkei Avos often. Three things upon which the world exists. Three things that remove you from the world. What does it mean to be removed from the world? If I have sinus abrios, if I dislike someone, I'm going to be struck by lightning, I'm going to drop dead. What does it mean to be removed from the world? So some Mefarshim, Rabbeinu Yonah says, it means that you've defeated the purpose for which the world was created. You can't operate in the world. If you're filled with hatred and animosity, if you succumb to your Yetzer Hara, you give in to your temptation and impulse, and if you live life with Ayin Ra, whatever that means, then you have removed, you have violated your very purpose for being existed, for being created, and your world is upside down. You know, you'll hear a person say, oh, my world is destroyed. My world is shaken. My world is upside down. What they mean their world is, they mean their lives. Their sphere of influence, their sphere of operation. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's what it means. Motzinus ha'adam min ha'olam. You can't function with others, you can't play nicely if you have these three attributes. So we've seen two examples. A third, the Medrash Tanchuma, source number two, and Parshas Kisisa tells us, We know there's a great distinction between the first set of luchos and the second. First set of luchos, Moshe comes down from the mountain, he sees the Jewish people are worshipping the golden calf, he takes the tablets and he breaks them, he smashes them. Second time he does better. They do better, he does better. What happened? Why did the first set of tablets have no luck and the second ones made it? Says the Medrash, source number 2, Tanaitic literature, I'm not making this up, in 2012. Haluchos Rishonos al shenitnu bepumbe lefichach shalta ba'ayin ra v'nishtabru. You know what the problem was? The first set of luchos were given, the first tablets were given with great pomp and circumstance. There was an incredible sound and light show. The entire people, 2 to 3 million people, surrounded Mount Sinai, our Sinai. God Himself spoke in an unprecedented and never to be repeated manner. Sound and lights everywhere. It was the most public display, maybe in history. Certainly the greatest display of revelation in history. Says the Medrash, that it was so public, welcomed and invited the Ayin Hara, and therefore the first set of luchos never made it. Because the more public something is, the more susceptible, the more vulnerable it is to this influence, whatever this influence is, we're going to define, and that's why the luchos didn't make it. What happened with the second set of luchos? Yeah. Moshe goes up a second time. Quiet, still, private, intimate. Kodesh Baruch Hu gives him luchos. Quiet, he comes down, he reunites with the people. There's no public fanfare, there's no pomp and circumstance, and therefore the second set of luchos make it. Says the Medrash. Again, if I would suggest this in 2012, you say, okay, mystical, Kabbalah centers, influence, whatever. This is the Medrash itself, this is Tanaitic literature. Source 3, another Medrash. Vayoma Yaakov Levanov Lama Tisra'u. That's the Pasuk. Amar Yaakov Levanov Atem Giborim, Atem Na'im, Al Tikansu Bishar Echad, V'al Tamdu B'makom Echad, Shelo Yishlot Bachem Ayin Ro'a. Yaakov is sending his sons down to Egypt. There's a famine and they're hungry. They need to go access where there's storage, which is in Egypt. Of course, Yosef's great economic vision of economic cycles. He stores. Yaakov sends his sons. He tells them, when you get down there, you know what? You're strong, and you're handsome, and you're beautiful, and you're going to attract a lot of attention. You know, all of these boys coming in, they're strapping young men, handsome young men, charismatic men. People are going to look at you, and everybody's going to say, why can't my son be more like that? Maybe he's available for my daughter. I wish I was more like that. So you know what Yaakov tells them? Al tikansu bishar echad. When you get down there, spread out a little bit. Don't walk in the same entrance. Don't walk in the same time. Don't stand in the same place. Why? Shelo yishlot bachem ayin ra. Lest you be vulnerable to the influence of the ayin ra. Again, a medrash, the medrash Tanchuma. Source number 4, another example. Eila pikudei ha-mishkan, mishkan ha-idus asher pukar al-pi Moshe, avudas levim biyad Isamar ben Aaron ha-kohen. This is the accounting of the Mishkan. Right, the beginning of Parshas Pekudei, the last Parsha of the book of Exodus of Shemos, it is a repeat of the accounting of the Mishkan. What precipitated this accounting? We have the famous Rashi quotes the Medrash. Moshe was accused, which is, I find, very comforting as a Jewish communal leader to know. You know, sometimes you get frustrated. Don't people know me? How could they doubt me? How could they be suspicious of me? How could they challenge me? Well, it's good to know that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was accused of stealing money from the shul budget, from the temple budget. Moshe was accused. You raised all this money from the building of the Mishkan. Some of the money's missing. We want to see the books. So Moshe says, you want to see the books? Eila pekudei ha-mishkan. Transparency. Here it is. This is the accounting. Says Rashi, this is the transparent budget, the accounting of the Mishkan, all of the monies that went in, an accounting of all the utensils and their costs. Comes along the Gur Aryeh. Who wrote the Gur Aryeh? A super commentary on Rashi? The Maharal, Rabbi Yehuda Lowy of Prague. In his Gur Aryeh, he writes, why don't we write this earlier? Pekudei is the last parsha of Shemos. We've been talking about the Mishkan since the middle of Shemos. Why are we first having this conversation now? Says the Maharal, it's well known the first set of tablets broke because they were delivered in a public format, pomp and circumstance. You know why the Mishkan ultimately got destroyed? Because the Mishkan itself was the victim of Ayin Hara. And why was the Mishkan the victim of Ayin Hara? Because when you count something, you welcome the Ayin Hara. So when the Torah says Eila Pekudei took an accounting of the Mishkan, it made it vulnerable. Right? Some people won't tell you how many children they have. How many grandchildren. How many this or that they have. Because when you count something, Davar Shebiminyan, when you start to count it, now you make it vulnerable, susceptible, exposed to the influence of Ayin Hara. V'chein beis ha-mikdash. Kol davar shayah b'mikdash hayah bo minyan, kasher nechtav b'feirish. V'chol makom sheish minyan, Ayin Hara sholeit bo. There was an accounting of everything in the beis ha-mikdash itself. Whenever you take an accounting, you make something vulnerable to Ayin Hara. So we have not yet defined what it is, but my point is, any Jew who tells you, Ayin Hara, ridiculous, doesn't exist, stupid, foolish, archaic, you are a witch doctor, they're simply ignorant. The Medrash, the Gerarye, the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos all reference a concept called an Ayin Hara. We have to define it, but to dismiss it and disregard it as if it doesn't exist is simply ignorance. Not only is it ignorance, but the concept of Ayin Hara has implications in Halacha and Jewish law. Really? There's Jewish law that's modeled after Ayin Hara? Absolutely. Says the Gemara Baba Basra, source number 5, page number 2. A vegetable garden differs from that of a courtyard in line with the statement of Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba said in the name of Rav Huna, said in the name of Rav, it is forbidden also la adam lamad b'stei chavero. You're not allowed to stand in your friend's field b'shash yomedes b'kamoseah, during the time it displays a standing crop. When the field is producing, ready to be harvested, when it has a standing crop, you're not allowed to stand without permission in your friend's field. Why? Now leave aside the concept of trespassing, which is the context of the Gemara here, but why? You know why? Rashi tells us, the art scroll here includes it, lest he become jealous and cast an evil eye on the field. And therefore there's a requirement to construct a wall in a garden so as one neighbor cannot gaze into the field of another and cause damage by having an ayin hara. Wow. So they say, okay, it's a Gemara. Maybe that's an agada. It's an agadic portion of Gemara. Doesn't mean it literally. Source number 6. Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat, the code of Jewish law says, L'fichach asa la'adam lamar al-stei chaveru b'sha sha'omedes b'kamoseah. It records this l'halacha. You're not allowed to stand in your friend's field when it's in full harvest. You have the halachic obligation to build a wall. And what is the reason? Ayin hara. Ayin hara. So there's a halachic application of this concept of ayin hara. It's not just an agadic, esoteric, theoretical one. There's actual implications, and we'll see more of them. Source number 7, another example. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Nunhei. Gemara there says, Pasach Yidach V'Amar, another Amora began, and he taught, Haiman Da'ayel Lamasa V'Dacha Me'enei Bisha. You're traveling to a city. You're going somewhere unknown. You're a stranger. You don't feel confident. You don't feel comfortable. You don't feel secure. And you feel vulnerable to the influence of Ayin Hara. What should you do? Linko Zkafa Diyada Dimene. Take the thumb of your right hand, and in his left hand. You take the thumb of your right hand, you put it in your left hand. And you place the thumb of your left hand in your right hand. And you say the following formula. This would be a great, instead of the red bendel, we should put this on a card that could fit in your wallet and sell it and raise money, and everyone will have it in their card. They'll put their thumbs in each other in the opposite hand, and they will pronounce, Ana ploni bar ploni, I the son and so-and-so, the son of so-and-so. Mizara de Yosef kasina. I'm the progeny of Joseph. I'm the offspring of Yosef. D'lo shilta b'enei bisha. Yosef, there was no power of the evil eye over him. We'll talk about why. Shenemar, the verse says, Ben poras Yosef, ben poras alei ayin. Yosef's charming son, a charming son to the eye. Al tikre alei ayin, don't pronounce it. When Yosef gets his bracha, he's described as a charming son to the eye. Don't pronounce it to the eye. Ela ola ayin. Ola ayin, rising over the eye. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Mehacha, V'yidgu larov bekerev ha'aretz. We're all familiar with the bracha that we sing, Amalach ha'go alasi. And it says, and may they, the children of Joseph, proliferate abundantly like the fish. Ma dagim shabayam mayim machasin aleim ve'ein ayin rasho letes pahem. Just as the fish are submerged underwater and the eye cannot impact them, so too, Avzaro shel Yosef, the progeny of Yosef, ein ayin rasho letes pahem. human being, if you identify yourself and associate with the spirit of Yosef, I am the offspring, I have the values of Yosef, then the ayin hara cannot possibly hurt you. So much so indeed that the Gemara says, that's what you do. If you feel vulnerable for whatever particular reason, you're worried about ayin hara, this is what you say, this formula, not to worry. Source number 8, the Gemara Bava Metzia. I'm throwing a lot of sources and information at you, primarily at first to establish that ayin hara is something real, and then we'll offer suggestions, what does it mean? But first we have to establish that it does have a basis in Jewish tradition. Says the Gemara Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Dalet. Rabbi Yochanan was accustomed to sit next to the entrance of the woman's mikvah. Right now, this is not why I bought a house right opposite the woman's mikvah. No one should worry. I'm very modest. I never look when I'm walking back and forth. Rabbi Yochanan, the great sage Rabbi Yochanan, would sit. Imagine, he would pull up a chair and sit opposite the entrance of the mikvah. Not the kelim mikvah and not the men's mikvah. He would sit opposite the women's mikvah. Now you'd think the women would take their pakeputs and hit him over the head. They would yell at him. They'd call him all kinds of names. They'd go complain about him, but they didn't. Why? Because why did he do so? Omar, he explained, Kisalkin benos Yisrael v'asin mitvila. When the women come out of the mikvah, mistaklin bi, they look at me. V'nehevei luhu zara deshapiri kevasei. And they will have children as beautiful as I. Rabbi Yochanan is identified in the Gemara as being an exceptionally handsome man. Rabbi Yochanan is identified as being exceptionally handsome man. I always found it interesting because the Gemara elsewhere identifies Rabbi Yochanan. He was a Baal Basar Hava. He was a little bit, he was a little heavy. He was a little chunky. And yet he's called an exceedingly handsome man. So Raya, you don't have to be super thin to be so handsome. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I sit opposite the mikvah. Why? When women come out, they look at me and they have children as beautiful as I am. So the rabbi said to him, what do they mean by the way? Because they talk about in the spiritual realm and even within the physical realm that what a person looks at and therefore what a person thinks about in the moment of intimacy has an impact on the child that is conceived. Holy thoughts yield holiness. Impure thoughts can have an impure influence, but that a person's thoughts and therefore what they looked at, the images they looked at, can have that impact. So this is not our topic for today. That's just to wake you up in case you started drifting a little bit from the shawarma you just ate. You started falling asleep, having a dremel. That woke you up a little bit. But that's not our purpose. So the rabbis turned to Rabbi Yochanan and they said, Amale Rabbanan lokam estapre mar me'ene bisha, Rabbi Yochanan. Aren't you worried? You're sitting opposite the mikveh. Every woman comes out and says, what a handsome man, what a tzaddik, what a talmud chacham, I want my son to be like him. What's going to happen? In a busy mikveh, one night, 20, 30 women are going to talk about, you're handsome, you're charming, you're a talmud chacham, you're a tzaddik, you're everything. And the ayin hara. It's going to have an ayin hara influence on you. So what did Rabbi Yochanan say? Amar leho. Rabbi Yochanan didn't say, interesting, Rabbi Yochanan didn't say, ayin hara. Get out of my face. What are you talking about? Ayin hara. Get lost. I'm doing this so that there's beautiful, handsome Talmidei Chachamim in Klal Yisrael. He didn't say that. What did he say? He says, Ana mizahrat Yosef kasina. I come from the progeny of Joseph. Tilo shilta be'enei bisha, over whom an evil eye has no power. Tichsiv ben poras Yosef, ben poras alei ayin. Again, the same Gemara we saw moments ago in Brachos, that Yosef is compared to the fish that are submerged, just like an evil eye has no impact on the fish below the surface of the water, so too, if you identify an associate as progeny of Yosef, you are not vulnerable to ayin hara. Source number 9, Baba Basra, page 3. Another example. We don't have time. You know what? Skip source number 9. Again, you have the same example where Yoshua is vulnerable and they tell him to go hide in the forest so that you're not vulnerable to the ayin hara. And what does he say? The top of the right-hand column, top of page 3. On the Mizara de Yosef. What are you dragging me a cab? What are you bothering me about ayin hara? I'm the progeny of Joseph. I identify as being the offspring of Yosef HaTzadik, and I'm not susceptible to ayin hara. Leave me alone. Source number 10. Pasuk says, Ve'esir Hashem imcha kol choli, that God will remove from you all illness. Amar Rav taught, Zu ayin. This refers to an evil eye, which is the source of all illness. Rav l'tamei, derav selak lebe kivrei. So this was Rav's opinion. Rav said, whenever you see someone get sick, you know what precipitated their illness? It was not the saturated fats, and it was not because they went out without a sweater. You know why they get sick? The Rav Salak the Bekivre, Rav used to go to the cemetery, Ovid Mai Da'ovid, he did whatever he had to do, meaning he would go from grave to grave to figure out what was the cause of death. Omar, and his conclusion was, Tishin v'tisha ba'ayin ra v'echad b'derech eretz. 99 out of 100 died because of ayin hara. 1 out of 100 died out of natural causes. 1 out of 100 die out of natural causes. 99% die because of ayin hara. Again, we have to see what ayin hara means. That was Rav's conclusion. Source number 11, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah had to run after this miracle that saved their lives. Where did they go? Amarav ba'ayin hara mesu. They died. They died through the evil eye. Shmuel Amar Baruch Tavu. No, they drowned in spittle. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Allah Yisrael. They went to Israel. V'nasu nashim v'aludu banu banos. So what does it mean that they went somewhere? So the first opinion, which is Rav, who is the same as the last Gemara, who says 99% of people die from Ayin Hara. You see, Rav very much subscribes to the concept of Ayin Hara. Source number 12, one of my favorites. Now it's even more one of my favorites. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chista, Bas Tchila, Simen Yafe Labanim. The Gemara in Baba Basra 141b says, when you have a daughter first, it is a good omen for sons. Right. Why?
Never mind how many, right?
Why? Right. So for a long time I said I have lots of simanim. I have lots of simanim. I have six omens. So anyway, but it turned out to be true. So why? Why is having a daughter first a good thing? Why is it good to have a daughter first? Ika Da'amar, the Gemara says a reason. She raises her younger brothers, and there are some who say it's because the evil eye will not have power over him. By having a daughter first, somehow, the evil eye will not have power over you. I like the Maharsha gives a great answer. Source 14, just as an aside, Rav Shmuel Idels, the Maharsha, Hagon Rav Shmuel Idels, he gives a different interpretation. He says, you know why it's good to have a daughter first? According to the laws of inheritance, what happens when you have a son first?
He gets
a double portion of what everyone else gets. So if you have a son and two daughters, you divide your estate by four. The son gets two portions, and the daughter, and well, daughters wouldn't get, that's a whole separate story. But in inheritance, if you have three sons, the oldest son gets two out of the four portions, and the other two sons each get one portion. Says the Maharsha, how's that going to do for your family dynamic? What do you think the brothers are talking about on the way out of the lawyer's office, right? So Shloshim is over, and they put up your headstone, and they've now given out the estate. How do you think the younger brothers are going to feel towards the older brother? Not too good. So therefore, Bas Tchila Simen Yafel Labanim, if you have a daughter first, so there's no Bechor, there's no oldest son who stands to inherit the double portion, it's a Simen Yafel Labanim, it's a good sign for the sons. They'll get along, because one of them will not be singled out as the Bechor. I never did the research. I always wanted to find out, was the Maharsha one of many boys, girls? Did he have sons, daughters? Maybe he was influenced by his own family situation. And lastly, source 13, the Gemara says in Bab Metzia, Amar B'Yitzchak, a very important Gemara, we'll see for today, Ein bracha metzuya ela b'davar asamoy min ha'ayin. If you want blessing, blessing always only resides in things that are hidden from the eye. I'll give you an example, a very personal example. My wife and I dated. We were very close to getting engaged. And the polite way of saying it is we broke up. The correct way of saying it is that she absolutely dumped me. Right? Fine. So I'll tell you that story another time when we're not being recorded. But anyway, so we were broken up for 6 weeks. And it's a whole story, how we got back together, the whole story. I knew I was marrying her all along. But we were broken up for the 6 weeks. And then we got back together. When we got back together, she said to me, she quoted this Gemara. She said to me, I don't know, knowing it or not knowing it, Ein ad bracha mitsuya ela bedavar samay min ha'ayin. She said to me, you know, the first time we went out, that whole world knew about it. And everybody had opinions about it. Our parents and our siblings and our friends and your dorm and my dorm, and everybody had an opinion about it. And you know what? There was an ayin hara. She said, we're back together again. The last thing we need is everybody having an opinion, everybody weighing in, everybody trying to... Let's keep it under the radar. Mm-hmm. And so our dates consisted of babysitting for my sister's kids. So they would go out and we'd hang out in their apartment. And that was... We didn't go to restaurants and we didn't go to public places. It was samay min ha'ayin. You keep things low-key. You keep it under the radar. You bought a stock, it's doing well. You don't have to tell the whole world. You're not going to believe the return I got on this stock. It's unbelievable. I'm making a killing. You're making a killing? Shh. Keep it quiet. Keep it under wraps. Because ain a bracha shorei ela bedavra samay min ha'ayin, says the Gemara b'Metzia Membeis, that blessing is found only in those things which are still, which are quiet, which are under the radar, which are hidden from the eye. So all of this is to give you a background again. Ayin hara has precedent. It's not a made-up term, it's not a modern term, whether all the way back to the Medrash, which is Tanaitic literature, all the way through Mishnah, through Gemara, Pirkei Avos, through the many, many Gemaras we saw, and through Halacha Lemaisa. And I'll give you an example of a Halacha you may be familiar with and not even realize that its basis is Ayin Hara. If you've made a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah in our shul, and you received one of the Aliyah sheets, you were honored to be able to have a certain amount of Kibudim on Shabbos morning, you went to fill out who you wanted to give the Aliyahs to. And when you try to fill it out, you likely realize that there's one complication. You're not allowed to give two brothers or a father and a son aliyahs back to back. Right? Anyone here heard of that?
Yeah. No.
Why? What's the origin of that halacha? Now you'll tell me, yeah, you made that. It's a halacha. Page number 4, source 15. Shulchan Aruch Or Chaim Siman Kuf Mem. Yecholam likra shnei achim zeh achar zeh v'aben achar av v'ein manichin ela b'shvil ayin hara. Technically, strictly speaking, there's no reason in the world you can't give aliyahs to two brothers back to back or a father and a son back to back. Why don't we do it, says the Shulchan Aruch? Ein manichin, the reason we don't do it? B'shvil ayin hara. Because you don't need everyone in shul pointing. Oh, the father gets, and the son gets, and oh, the father and the son, how much do they have to give to get these aliyahs? What's going on here? Even if one gets shvi, the seventh aliyah, and the other maftir, which you'll really see as, you know, you really need to read seven aliyahs, maftir is separate. No, if you're calling them back to back, and their names will be called back to back, you can't do it. Why? Ayin Hara, says the Mishnah Berura, ve'ein nafka mina bein achim min ha'av o min ha'em. It doesn't matter if they're half siblings. You're not allowed to get an aliyah before or after your half sibling. Vafilu omrim she'ein makpidin alayin hara. This is an interesting Mishnah Berura. So let's say the father and son, the two brothers, come to the gabbai and they say, ayin hara? We don't believe in it. Ridiculous. Foolish. Give us two aliyahs back to back. We don't buy into that stuff. Still, you're not allowed to. V'yesh machmir nafilu avim ben beno mishum enei bisha. Mishnah Berurah adds, we are so strict because the stakes are so high because we're talking about ayin hara, we don't even give an aliyah to a grandfather and a grandson back to back. But if there's no other way to divide up the aliyahs, you can give a grandson and a grandfather. But otherwise, we don't. What about Hag ben Galila? This came up actually last Shabbos. The Gabbai asked me. Hag ben Galila we're not strict with. Nobody's really looking. You don't get an ayin hara because you got Galila. You got an ayin hara because you got an aliyah. So that's why. So here's an example. We have a halacha. It's codified in Shulchan Aruch. Again, anyone who says there's no such thing as ayin hara, those two words, is ignorant. It's in the Mishnah. It's in the Medrash. It's in the Gemara. And here it's in the Shulchan Aruch. It's throughout our Jewish scholarship. You have another example of halacha, Shulchan Aruch, or Chaim Siman Shin Aleph. Hilchos Shabbos, Shulchan Aruch writes, Lo yetzi asus biznav shual shetolim bo einav, shelo tishlot bo ayin hara. Talking about what you could decorate, what's considered carrying, not carrying, how do you decorate your animal, if the animal's wearing this flashy thing, you shouldn't go out with it, why? Ayin hara, shelo tishlot bo ayin hara. It'll bring on ayin hara. I'll give you another example that you're all familiar with. Rav Avadia brings in his tshuvas and Yabia Omer, source 18, the very last line. Anyone been to a wedding recently? What do you do at the end of the wedding? Put the ring on, they read the ksuba, rabbi gives a moving speech, you have the sheva brachas, and before they depart from under that chuppah, the chassan's going to
break
a glass. So I say under every chuppah, I get a laugh every time, to the dear chassan, why do we break a glass? This is the last time you're going to put your foot down. Right? Good. And I get that same laugh every time. Shkoyach, thank you. Thanks for coming out, you've been a great crowd. Okay, so what's the reason? The well-known reason why we break the glass is, in the moment of our great joy, we're thinking about the Churban. The destruction of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash is in here, Yerushalayim is Bechurbana, we have to think about it. Says Rav Avadia Yosef, source 18, a different reason. He says, Shavar kasa demukrei bas tafzuzei, gematria ayin ro, levatel katrego shal satan, lebaltera eino besimchaschem. He says the reason we break the glass is, to say broken glass is in gematria, the same thing as ayin hara, And so as you stand under the chuppah and everybody's looking, she's beautiful, he's beautiful, the chuppah's beautiful, the shmorg was beautiful, look at all their other children walk down the aisle, were beautiful, each of them got married so quickly, why weren't they busy in shidduchim, their children got married so quickly, and how they afford this wedding is so magnificent, and everyone is so healthy, and Kanai Nahara, the great grandparents are 400 years old are here, and everything is so perfect. So the chuppah's going on, this ayin hara is flying throughout the whole room, says Rav Avadia, that's where the custom developed to break the glass. When you break the glass, you break the ayin hara, you're no longer vulnerable to ayin hara. So here you have all of these sources for ayin hara, which brings us up to our class. This was all introduction. It brings us up to our topic for today. Page 5. What's ayin hara? We've established that it exists. Mishnah, Medrash, Gemara, Pirkei Avos, Maral, Halacha, Shulchan Aruch, Rav Avadia. We've established that it exists. What is it? What are we trying to protect ourselves from? How does it work to identify with Yosef? Why is that an effective way of protecting ourselves from it? What is it? What if I don't believe in it? What's it all about? So, the Ramban, lest you think again it's a modern phenomenon, the Ramban, Nachmanides, 12th century Spain, then Israel, source 19, the Ramban says, Al kein yesh lomar ki bisham ba koach shel ayin hara. Ki ayin ra begamatria dalad meos. Umachant matzasi betshuva she'ela shel gaon ki ayin hara rubo nimtza betalmidei chachamam ve'einam beretzonam. The biggest power of ayin hara rests among talmidei chachamim, and it's not within their power. You know where the greatest ayin hara is? Some nudnik is bothering the Talmud Chacham, taking away his time, decreasing and diminishing his ability to access wisdom, and he can't help it, but when he looks at that nudnik, he bestows upon him the ayin hara. He bestows upon him the ayin hara. What is this ayin hara that the Ramban is describing? Why is it found most among these Talmidei Chachamim, and the nudniks deserve it or get it the most? What is it, and how does it work, and what's happening? So source number 21, the Chazon Ish. The Yeshaya Karlitz of Bnei Brak, who was the great, one of the great, if not the greatest, of the last generation, the Helege Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish writes here in his commentary on Choshen Mishpat, section of Shulchan Aruch. He writes, he's referring to the Gemara that talks about the rabbis looked at him and he dropped dead. The rabbis had the power of looking at someone and he dropped dead. Says the Chazon Ish, how does that work? Misodo Sabriya, he says, from the foundations of creation, quantum physics. Loosely translated. Did the Chazon Ish study quantum physics? I doubt it. Was he familiar with it? How did he arrive at this? Because he knew these truths through Torah, he didn't need science. But the Chazon Ish is essentially alluding to a principle of quantum physics, the observer effect. And I am the last person to be teaching you about quantum physics. I know nothing about it, quantum physics, quantum mechanics. But in my beyond layman's terms, I'll put it to you this way. Science, many years ago, would have told you it's a ridiculous suggestion that when a person can look at something, they can have an influence over it. But science today, physics today, quantum physics today understands that simply by looking at matter, we can influence that matter. We have an impact on it just by looking at it. How that works, physics, metaphysics, again, study it on your own. I don't have a deep understanding. Anyone here a physicist? No. On the one hand, that's a big relief, and on the other hand, it'd be nice if someone here knew physics. But quantum physics, quantum mechanics, essentially validates this concept that one body can have an influence on B, even just being in the presence of B, and certainly looking at B. So says the Chazon Ish, Misodos Habriya. This is part of the natural order, that by looking at something, you can have an impact on it. That's how the Chazon Ish understands Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara works exactly as it sounds. If I look at you the wrong way, I can project a negative energy on you, and it can have an impact on you that lasts. By looking at you the wrong way, I can send a negative energy. Energy is real. Energy can be measured. Energy has an impact. And by sending negative energy, it leaves a residual negative effect or impact on you. And that's ayin hara. That's ayin hara. But here's my problem. Let me explain to you my problem. I'm somewhat of a rationalist. And the God I believe in, the God I believe in interacts with people in a just way. And so I struggle to accept that understanding. Because my feeling is essentially the following. If God feels I'm entitled to good health and nachas for my children, I've earned it, I merit it, I deserve it, my merits, my parents' merits, whatever the reason, I pray for it. If God determined I deserve it, why should you be allowed to, by looking at me the wrong way, take it away from me? You have a power over God? In other words, if God thinks I should be healthy, the way you look at me should have nothing to do with it. And if God thinks I shouldn't be healthy, you could send all the positive energy in the world my way, I'm not going to be healthy. Don't we believe it's God? Don't we believe it's God? God is the one who determines our destiny. God determines our fate. God determines our health, our happiness, and so on and so forth, our parnasa. So if we have faith in an omnipotent being who interacts with us, and that's a whole worthy of a whole other class, evidence that there is a being, evidence that he continues to interact with us, the whole notion of predeterminism versus free will, I think we did that last year in the Lunch and Learn. So assuming, though, you take for granted that God interacts with us, which I try to live my life by assuming. So if I deserve goodness, God will give me goodness. And the fact that I have a grouchy neighbor who looks at me the wrong way, why should somebody, some eiswarf, some fabrenta, some negative, miserable, some why should their negative energy be able to take away my happiness? Does that make sense to you, that God would allow that? That God would create a system like that? It doesn't make sense. Some braggous person could hurt my children, could bestow an illness on me? That doesn't make sense to me. So I want to suggest to you a few alternative understandings of Ayin Hara. Look at the Rav Shitzer Rebbe, source 20. The Heilige Zera Kodesh, Parshas Vayetze, which happens to correspond with this week's Parsha. Parshas Vayetze. Says Rav Naftali Tzvi Horowitz, the Rav Shitzer Rebbe, L'mashal sheshamati bialdusi skula mipi ha'omrem shemisherotze shelolitein ayin hara latinok yistaka lamala. He says, when I was a child, I heard a formula. You know how you avoid giving an ayin hara? Someone's pushing a stroller. You're looking in that stroller. Oh, cute, adorable, sweet little child. You could give an ayin hara to that kid. So you know how you avoid the ayin hara? He doesn't say tie a red string around the kid's wrist, weave a red string into his crib, her crib, but rather, says the Zera Kodesh, the Rav Shitzer Rebbe, the proper way to avoid an ayin hara is that when you look at the child right afterwards, look up. Look up. He says, this is not mere superstition, this came from somebody. And what's the idea behind it? So he writes, Ki ayin hara ba mizeh kasher adam roa eza davar na'e o eza gedula b'mamon o b'banim o b'gvura o b'chom mala v'hu mas min ma'od al ma'alaso shalzeh. You know what the ayin hara is the result of? When you see something someone has that stands out. They have a lot of wealth, a lot of happiness, a lot of health, and they are promoting it. They're projecting it. They're wearing it on their sleeve. They're showing it off. And you look at it, you're very bewildered. You're rather bothered. And you say, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Why do they have that? Even when you look at it and you react with wonder from goodness and you say to yourself, that's amazing. They've got 8 kids and they married them all off so easily. And they each found amazing, amazing spouses. That's really so wonderful. And you really mean it in the most positive way. But when you call it out as being unusual, he writes, Gorem ra bezeh. Just calling it out for being unusual brings negativity. Shu mafrid hadavar misho rasho. Because when you call it out, and when you point out that it's so unusual, you have cut it off from its source. Kiilu hayaroa chacham v'davak b'Hashem yizbarach lo hayamat miyaklal. If you really believe in God, and you really understand that God does everything, you would never react with surprise. You'd never react with wonder. You'd see someone with the most amazing accomplishments, happiness, children, wealth, and you'd say, it's a Kodesh Baruch Hu, nothing's beyond God. God decided to bless them with what they have. I'm not surprised. I'm not reading the Forbes 400 and I say, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates says, how many billions that makes? It's unbelievable. I can't believe it. I never thought anyone could have it. How did he do it? If you do that, you're cutting it off from God. Because if you believe in God, you say, God could give $1 trillion to someone, $1 gazillion. God could give anything he wants. So what do you do? So the way to repair the antidote to it is when you lift your eyes. Because when you look up, what you're saying is, I just reacted with surprise. Oh, Kanainara, what a gorgeous child. I never saw such a gorgeous child. So unusual, so amazing, crazy. Six girls, a boy, how'd that happen? Unbelievable, never happened. And then all of a sudden you've shown, it's impossible. You've said that this is something which is impossible. So what do? When you look up, you say it is possible. I'm taking away the ayin hara, I look up and I bring an ayin tov, the goodness, when with faith I look up to Hashem and I bring the positive energy to say, anything's possible. When I believe in Hashem, absolutely anything is possible. So that's the Rav Shitzer Rebbe, the Zera Kodesh, that's how he understands ayin hara. Chazon Ish said ayin hara is like quantum physics. You can look at something and have an impact. If I send negative energy your way, it has a negative impact. Says the Rav Shitzer Rebbe, it doesn't work that way. Both, everybody, we should all look up. You're worried that something's an ayin hara, someone says something to you, you say something, look up. And when you're looking up, there's no secret to looking up. You're looking up, you might as well say with your eyes, what you're saying looking up is, bli ayin hara. That's what you're saying with your eyes. You're saying, it's all from Hashem, and therefore it's not vulnerable. Just hold your questions, because I'm afraid we're going to run out of time, there was still a lot more I want to talk about. Another interpretation, a third interpretation. And this is the Maharal, a little bit, and others, who basically say the following. Really, I'll connect the Maharal with Rav Dessler. Turn to the next page, page 6. Rav Dessler, Rav Eliyahu Dessler, who knows the Mashkiach, he was in England for many years, then he was the Mashkiach in Ponovitch Yeshiva, and we have his writings that have been collected into the Michtav Me'eliyahu. He says, what's Ayin Hara? And how are you saved from Ayin Hara? And what does that have to do with Yosef HaTzadik? What's really going on here? So the Michtav Me'eliyahu develops the following idea. He says, Ayin Hara doesn't exist as some mystical, negative energy or force. In fact, that's ridiculous. And to suggest that a human being could override God says you deserve good health and good parnasa, but I looked at you the wrong way, I gave you my evil eye, and I took away your parnasa. That's not Jewish. That's not Torah. That's ridiculous. So how does Ayin Hara work? Ayin Hara is not really about the person who bestows the Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara, the guilty party is the one who brought upon themselves the Ayin Hara. Essentially, says Michtav Me'eliyahu, what I alluded to earlier about that Gemara, about Bracha. He says, when you fly under the radar, you get away with stuff from Hashem. Okay, you know, God chose to look the other way. So you're making more parnasa than really you should, based on your merits. But God's choosing to look the other way. You're getting away with it. You have health. You have nachas from your children. You have a big house. But what happens when you start to show these things off? When you start to draw attention to them? When someone else gives you an ayin hara, what they're essentially saying is, hey God, why do they deserve that and not me? God says, well, now that you mention it, bring me their file. Now that you mention it, they don't deserve all that parnasa, all that good health, all that nachas, that big house. So ayin hara is not some mystical negative energy one person can throw on another person. There's no laser that comes out of your eye that zaps someone and hurts them. But for Rav Dessler, ayin hara means that fly under the radar. Be happy with what you have in life. Don't show off. Don't be showy. Because when you start showing off and you're a showy person, you're welcoming others to look at you and say, why does he have that thing? And I don't. And when others turn to God and say, why does he or why does she have that thing? Then God says, you know what? Let me check why they have it. Let me see if they deserve it. And we may not like the conclusion that he's going to come to. This is similar to a Gemara. The Gemara says, in a few places, that a person should not walk under a dilapidated wall, and a person should not turn in their friend into court, and a person should not be overly confident in prayer. What do these three things have in common? Rashi and Tosfos both say, all three things, you're showing overconfidence. When you show overconfidence, you're basically boasting to the Almighty Himself. And you're telling God, bring it on, God. Check into me. See if I deserve it. You walk under a dilapidated wall that's about to fall. So, really, by the rules of physics, it should fall on your head. The rules of gravity, it's going to knock you unconscious. You've got to be an idiot to walk under it. When you walk under it, you're saying, I'll be good. I deserve it. I'll be fine. I'm confident. God says, you're so fine. You think you're so okay? Bring me his file. Bring me your file. Let me see what's going on. So this is the same. This is the same idea, says Rav Dessler. When we boast, when we show off, when we're showy in an inappropriate way, we invite ayin hara. What is the ayin hara we're inviting? Not inviting someone to zap us with their eyes, but we're inviting their jealousy, and their jealousy incites or provokes God to take a closer look at us. And that closer look at us usually doesn't end well. So what's the antidote to ayin hara? What's the antidote to ayin hara? To be modest. It's very simple, says Rav Dessler. Don't show off. Don't be showy. Don't show off. Don't wear it on your sleeve. Don't boast. Don't incite jealousy among others. And now you understand all the sources that we read earlier. Blessing only dwells on things that are private. You're going to tell everyone about the killer deal you just struck in business? How much money you just made on the stock market? You're going to tell everybody about how amazing your family is? You're going to talk all day long about everything being amazing in your life? Mm-hmm. It's going to catch up with you. Mm-hmm. Other people are going to start to turn to God and say, why does so-and-so? And God's going to take a closer look. The antidote to ayin hara is to say, I'm happy with what I have. I'm flying under the radar. I'm all good. How does it work to say, I'm the offspring, the progeny of Yosef? Why is that successful? Turn to source 24, page 7. Ona mizar de Yosef kasina. He says the following, the Maharal, Rabbi Yehuda Lowy of Prague, in his Chidushei Agados, his commentary on that Gemara Bava Metzia. Kol birchas Yosef mimakom nistar panimi. She'en ha'ayin sholeit begiloi v'sham sholeit ayin hara. Aval koach Yosef u'mimakam nistar panimi at she'en ha'ayin sholeit sham. V'gam ze yadua l'misha mevin dvarim elu l'fishayu Yosef koach imtsoi b'seisar v'shnei k'tzavos mibachutz. V'davar zeh yarash min Yaakov. Birchas avicha gavru. V'yadua ki Yaakov hayo lo midos ha'imtsoi ben Avram ben Yitzchak mizeh kashinim shach koach zeh l'Yosef hayo lo koach panimi nistar ben Yud beis ha'shvatim. V'yadoma Yaakov l'ikar ilam v'ashvatim imanafim. He's describing it in esoteric terms, but essentially what the Maharal says is Yosef is an inner strength. Yosef is symbolized by being under the radar. Yosef understands what's his. Why is Yosef called Yosef HaTzadik? How did he earn that appellation that he's the righteous one? Because the wife of Potiphar tried to seduce him over and over and over again. And he was about to give in. Mm-hmm. Actually, today's Daf Yomi. He was about to give in, and Yosef withstood. He walked out. And where did he find the strength to walk out? Because he knew what was his and what didn't belong to him. And he wasn't jealous of that which didn't belong to him, and he didn't try to dip his hand into that which didn't belong to him. And that's what ayin hara is all about. The ability to be happy with what you have, and to not be jealous of others, and to not invite or provoke the jealousy of others onto you. That's why when you say, I am the progeny of Yosef, I cannot be influenced by ayin hara, what you're essentially saying is, I'm not boastful, I'm not showing off. I'm happy I have what I have. It comes from Hashem. I'm not jealous of others. I'm not asking for others. I'm not placing my eye on others. And that's why we say, Bli Ayin Hara. Whenever we're fearful, someone says, how many children you have? You can give the answer, I have such and such. Bli Ayin Hara. When you say Bli Ayin Hara, you think that mystically protects you? It's ridiculous. Shema Tov, by the way, source 25 is another beautiful pshat about Yosef and Ayin Hara. We don't have the time. How does it help you? You think saying Bli Ayin Hara, oh, I have a beautiful house and I made a killing on the stock market and I have 100,000 magnificent children who all found the Shidduchim easily and my health has never been better, my shalom bias is perfect. Bli Ayin Hara. You think the Bli Ayin Hara is going to protect you just because you uttered the words Bli Ayin Hara? Some magic formula? Of course not. Bli Ayin Hara, says Rav Dessler, is a tefillah. Bli Ayin Hara is a prayer. You're essentially saying, after acknowledging some goodness that you have, Bli Ayin Hara, I thank God for it. I'm not jealous of others, and you have no reason to be jealous of me. I'm grateful I have what I have from God. I'm not showing off. I'm not boasting. All of that is implicit in the expression Bli Ayin Hara. Bli Ayin Hara means, I understand where it comes from. Don't be jealous of me. I'm not jealous of you. I'm grateful. I have it in a moment. It could be gone in a moment. It's all by the grace of God. I'll tell you what doesn't help ward off the ayin hara. What categorically does not help ward off the ayin hara is a red string. And why do I say that? Look at the second source book that you have in front of you. Where's the red string from? So I read to you from the authoritative Encyclopedia of the World, otherwise known as Wikipedia. Significance of the red thread tied around the wrist. It is customary for Hindus to tie a red thread, commonly called a mawali or a kalava, on the wrist at the beginning of a religious ceremony. The thread is tied on the right wrist of the man and the left wrist of women. The literal meaning of mawali is above all. Look at number two there. The red string of fate, also referred to as the red thread of destiny, red thread of fate and other variants, is an East Asian belief originating from Chinese legend and is used in Japanese legend. So you want to believe in a red string? You can join the Hindus, the Chinese, or the Japanese, but I'll tell you who not to join. The Jewish people. Now why do I say that? First of all, my biggest piece of evidence to you that the red string is a farce is source number, in our first source book is source on page 8, or if you look on source number 3 on that other source book. So don't ask me where I found this, but if I dug up an application for trademark and registration from the Kabbalah Center who tried to trademark the red string. Kabbalah Center sells the red string for a hefty price, promising you all kinds of protection, mystical protection. And I ask you a simple question. If you had access to something that could really help people, would you trademark it? Make money off of it? Are we trademarking the tzitzis and the tefillin? Are we trademarking the Shabbos candles? We're trying to share it. Yeah, we're trying to share it with the whole world. We're trying to share it with the entire world. This is it's a farce. It has no source. But the truth is it does have a source. Source, if you look, if you switched over to the second source sheets, source number 5. You know what that source it does have is? A Tosefta. The Tosefta is Tanaitic literature that didn't make it into the Mishnah. Tosefta in Brachos in the 7th chapter says, Eilu dvara midarchei ha'emori. The following are idolatrous practices. And they are, Hakosher mitultelash ayirecha v'chut edom al etzbo. Someone who ties a red string on their finger or wrist. You know what is an idolatrous practice, says the Tosefta, Tanaitic literature? Someone who ties a red string. The red string has no basis in Judaism. The only reference we have to a red string in our tradition is the Tosefta saying that it's idolatrous practice. Wikipedia confirms that by telling us that this is the practice of Hinduism, Chinese and Japanese legend having to do with fate. And if you look at source 6 there, you have it in Hebrew and you have it translated into English. It's a report by Reb Label Shapiro. He writes the following. First year the yeshiva in Miami opened up, a bacha from Torah Vadas learned there. He said that once he entered Yechidos, he asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe if there's any point to the red string. Does it protect against Ayin Hara? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't answer. But the bacha asked again. The Rebbe answered sharply. And he said, Darchei Ha'emori. It's connected to Avodah Zarah. Lubavitcher Rebbe himself understood. Of course he knew this Tosefta. And said, you want to know where there's a reference to the red string? There's a very simple reference to the red string. It is considered an idolatrous practice. We don't believe and we don't embrace in this kind of thing. So there is no basis for a red string as being something that wards off Ayin Hara. And according to our understanding of Ayin Hara, that makes complete sense. Because Ayin Hara is not some mystical thing that strikes me a negative energy that zaps me. Ayin Hara meant I was boastful. I showed off. I invited and provoked somebody to attract God's attention to judge me harshly. So if God's going to judge me harshly because I was boastful, what am I going to tell God? I'm good. Check it out. Got the red string. I'm like Superwoman over here. I got the red strings on my wrist, God. I'm all good. I'm untouchable. You're not untouchable. If you were boastful in a way that provoked God's judgment, believe me, that red string ain't going to help you. Being boastful is going to be your demise. The antidote to Ayin Hara is to remember where everything comes from, to be modest and humble, to be grateful for what we have, to not show off, to understand and appreciate that as quickly as we got it is something that could disappear from us any moment. And that's the ultimate antidote, and that's why we use the words Bali Ayin Hara whenever we reference Ayin Hara. So if we go back, we can now understand all of our earlier sources. Rabbi Eliezer taught in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, what is a negative attribute to avoid? Ayin Ra! Don't look at other people in a judging way. Don't look at them in a jealous way and say, God, why do they deserve that and I don't? God, judge them. That's bad behavior, don't do that. Rabbi Yeshua taught, what are the 3 things that remove you from the world? Ayin Ra. If you live your life with jealousy and envy and you're always looking at others and saying, why do they deserve it? I want it. Your whole life is going to be destroyed. You won't have a world. You'll be miserable your whole life. And we can understand all these other sources as well, the Shulchan Aruch, all these other ideas. Don't be boastful about the good things you have in your life. Keep them quiet, keep them modest, keep them humble, keep them under wraps, and then bracha will reside. Why was Rabbi Yochanan not worried when he said, I am the offspring of Yosef? What he meant was, I can sit outside the woman's mikvah and it's not going to bring ayin hara, because I am the offspring of the progeny of Yosef. I know it's mine. I don't try to take that which doesn't belong to me. I'm modest and I don't incite the jealousy or the envy of others as well. So this is the basis of what I believe is true ayin hara. In answer to our question, is ayin hara a silly superstition or is it a force to be reckoned with? Somewhere in between. I think the people on the extreme who live this life of crazy, you stepped over a child, they're going to stop growing, you got to pour this way, not that way, you got to wear this, not that, you got to say poo poo poo, duh. I think it's foolishness. I think it's ridiculous. That is superstition in Judaism. You know, that's what we left in Mitzrayim. We were supposed to leave that behind in Egypt. On the other hand, the opposite extreme that says, there's no such thing as ayin hara, bring it all on, I don't believe in it, I think is equally as foolish. To me, the meaning of ayin hara is to recognize there is a influence of ayin hara in the world. I bring it upon myself when I act immodestly, and the greatest way to offset it is to act with humility and modesty. When I say bli ayin hara, it is a prayer that God not judge me, people not be envious of me, and I not be envious of anyone else as well. Thank you for joining us again. Thank you for the sponsorship to the BRJE Board of Directors. And if you'd like to sponsor in the future, you could speak to Rabbi Moskowitz.